Hello, everyone, and welcome to The Filmcast, a podcast about movies. I am David Chen, here with Devinder Hardwar and Jeff Cannata, and it is time to have our reckoning for the 2025 Summer Movie Wager. It's been a great summer filled with surprises and some things that weren't surprises at all, that some of us managed to not choose for our list despite all that. But we are really thrilled to have on all the people that were here for the initial Summer Movie Wager episode. I'm going to introduce them one by one. He is a senior reporter at IO9 Gizmodo. Jermaine Lucier, welcome back to the Filmcast.
Thank you so much for having me.
He is the co-creator of the Ordinary Adventures YouTube channel, Peter Serretta. Thanks for joining us.
Some people were less surprised than others, Dave.
And she is the co-host of the This Ends at Prom podcast, and writer-editor at slashfilm.com, BJ Colangelo. Welcome back to the podcast.
Hi.
All right, folks. So this is probably not going to take as much time as the initial podcast we had. We're going to count down what actually happened this summer. The top 10 movies at the domestic box office this
summer. I want to talk first! I'm coming in hot, Dave!
Oh, no.
We didn't discuss this, Jeff.
You said we're going to save the surprise to the end. Guess what? Fuck that! I call shenanigans! Shenanigans!
Jeff is so angry for a winner, man.
I declare bankruptcy of this whole... You're out of order. They're out of order. This whole... If I was the man I was 10 years ago, I'd take a flamethrower to this place.
Okay.
Shenanigans! Wow.
Well, I think Jeff is helping us to segue into a nice segment, which is, before we count down the top 10, are there any overall reactions, without referring to anything specific, any overall reactions to the summer box office?
It's on tape. It's on tape. He said it. He said it out loud. He said, I wasn't going to put Lilo and Stitch as number one. He said, Dan Trachtenberg told me to put Lilo and Stitch at number one. It's on tape. Mm-hmm. But the crime is on tape.
It's true. So many crimes.
You know, there's also another crime on Jeff Cannata's list. It was called Freakier Friday. And it may have cost Jeff the title.
One weapon away from...
I gave him crap for the date, but a film on that date made the list. So it wasn't the pick.
That's right.
It was, you know, it was not a bad pick.
I'm just saying, you know, Peter consults all his massive mound of data, and he's cross-referencing, and he's calling up big-time Hollywood directors, and he's like, hey... Well, what do you think I should do? Me? I got both eyes tied behind my back. I don't even know what the
by
movie's
choice.
About before I
by
put
choice.
It on my list.
See, this is all
I'm like,
by choice.
What even is a Superman? I don't know.
Yeah.
Here's the thing. I want to say one thing.
Shenanigans!
Number one, if those two movies were reversed, the person who won still would have won.
Oh,
I'm not gonna say who won.
Wow, wow! That's
if only Jeff could contact big time Hollywood directors.
Interesting to note.
Or actually, there would be a tie. Actually,
first of all, let me just say I don't know why Jeff Cannata is complaining, because he, for the first time in a really long time, he came in not dead last, which is
it's too close. That's
a huge moral victory.
Jeff is used to feeling dead last.
A huge moral victory. You know.
Yeah, it's worse. Coming in last doesn't hurt as much as coming in second place to a guy
that is true.
Didn't even have the right list before he talked to, I don't know, a guy who's connected, who's hobnobbing with J.J. Abrams and James Cameron. Who do I know? I know no one except you
people. And we don't know who Dan or other people might have consulted, too. He might have called. People might have called James Cameron. Or
that's right.
Steven Spielberg. Mm-hmm. Who knows?
Well,
Bob Iger.
Oh, man.
That's right.
Jermaine is saying, by the transitive property, Jeff, you know, you may have consulted those people as well. So
I am not saying that.
I am not.
I don't know. He's saying that Peter probably talked to both Lilo and Stitch.
Okay. All right.
Wait, can I make one argument here?
Go ahead, Peter.
I mean, I've won a few times. But two times.
Oh, that's your argument.
But no. But two times in like very recent memory.
Uh huh.
And those least. Two times were after I left Slashfilm. After I've gotten away from the business, I feel like being away from the business and not knowing as much has helped me
mm-hmm.
more than it's hurt me. Like I think the theory is that it lets me go in as an accountant and like see.
Yeah.
The matrix. Sure.
Well, we will see. There's no rule yep. against asking for help. I wouldn't do it because I have morals, but I think
you're a gentleman.
Can I clarify here? I did not go to Dan Trachtenberg and say, like, Dan, help me with the summer movie wager. He was like, what have you been up to? I was like, today I put together summer movie wager. And he's like, oh, what did you put as number one? I said, whatever. And he was like, What about Lilo and Stitch? I said a number two. And he's like, I think, and I was like, I talked to him for a while. I was like, yeah, mm-hmm. let's switch. But like, it wasn't like yeah. literally I no. went to him. And
That's called a confession.
Okay. 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 All right. Anyway, by the way, this is amazing, by the way, folks, because I just want you to know before we started this podcast, I literally said to everyone, hey, you know, it's not a secret who the winner is, but maybe let's just try to like keep an air of mystery throughout the podcast.
Jeff's like, F that.
Jeff's like, F that, which I understand. A lot of emotions, but hey, we're going to count down the top 10 movies of the summer box. Let's just get into it. I think we should just get into it, and then we can share our feelings about those movies as things continue. So let's begin, folks. All right. The number one movie at the summer box office this summer was Lilo and Stitch.
Of course.
And you guys Everybody called knew. It four out of the six people on this podcast.
Should have been three.
Peter, Jeff, Jermaine, and Devendra all said Lilo and Stitch would be number one. I think you guys nailed it, obviously. Devendra, I think, made a really great impassioned plea for Lilo and Stitch that there continues to be Stitch media out in the world right now. That Indeed. Stitch
it's like the
remains,
anti-avatar.
Stitch remains in that culturally
Stitch
relevant.
Stitch exists years after its release.
The anti-avatar.
Yeah. Coming in at $423 million. Lilo and
still
Stitch.
Lower than most of us mm-hmm. anticipated, though.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we all picked our number that we were, you know, our tiebreaker number, which probably should have come into play.
Somebody must have said 420. That's pretty close. That's pretty close to
did
the
you say 420? Oh
man, somebody must have.
Did somebody? No, I don't think anybody did.
Yeah, I'm just
we're not
curious.
Cool enough to say 420.
Yeah, let me confirm that. But in the meantime,
I said 520.
In the meantime, what do you guys make any reactions to this being the number one movie of the summer? It kind of just, hey,
I still have not seen it.
Hate it. I can say that much. And it has nothing to do with my list. My list was chosen off of vibes and spite. And yet I still came at the top end of this list, despite yes. not picking Lilo and Stitch as my number one, which I did on a moral reason because I don't want them to continue making these live action animated remakes. And I thought after Snow White, we'd be good. We were in the clear. I was wrong. And I'm disappointed in you, America.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I feel exactly the same way. By the way, here were people's tiebreaker numbers. Jermaine Lucier chose, as a tiebreaker, we chose how much money the number one movie would make. Jermaine Lucier listed $457 million. BJ said $527 million. Peter, $402. Devendra, $510. And Jeff, $520. I chose $530. So I think the closest
would be...
wait
a second. If there was a tie between me and Jeff, who would have won?
That's beside the point, Peter.
I do think it seems like Peter's choice of 402 is very close to the actual 423 that Lilo and Stitch made in
it.
The summer.
God damn it. Hoist it on my own petard again.
Yeah. But yeah, so great job, guys. Lilo and Stitch, huge hit, despite apparently the movie not being very good. I still haven't even seen it to date.
I thought it was fine. I was never a huge fan of the original. Never was one of something I grew up. So I thought this was fine. But I think it was just one of those movies that you just kind of was like Devendra said, had the audience, had the release date, didn't have a lot of family competition, seemed mm-hmm. like a no-brainer. Unless you're Peter Sreda, but you know.
I want to say, as we're reading down this list, I'm reading this from thesummermoviewager.com, put together by Dennis, a listener of the Filmcast, who did a great job of putting together the list as usual this summer and also made this year a nail biter as usual. Just kind of posting his brutal insults of people such as myself and you, their hey, terrible
that's
choices.
One upside, Dave, is that none of your nails were bitten to this year. You in particular, mm-hmm. no biting of the nails.
Oh, I see.
Oh,
I see. Yes, you my nails are fully intact.
Running so fast.
Wow. Kicked his way
I've
to the bottom.
I've seen Jeff. I haven't seen Jeff this feisty in quite a while. Okay, so Lilo and Stitch, number one, $423 million. Coming in at number two, Superman, $351 million.
This one hurts.
This was dead hit by Peter Serretta and Jeff Cannata.
Yeah. It's so close to number three. Look how close that is. That's
yeah,
wild.
It's within $13 million of number three. So real, real close. In terms of domestic box office. And mm-hmm. hey, guys, looks like the James Gunn DCU is going to happen, which is kind of cool. That's nice, right? Like, a lot of doubt as to whether this movie would actually do well enough to warrant.
Was there?
I had some doubts.
I had some doubts. You had
where
doubts.
Did you put it? David, exactly. Where did you put it again?
I put this at number four. So wasn't substantially lower. Substantially lower for sure. And, look, we can talk about my list later, okay? But in the meantime, Superman number two, this was a really fun movie, crowd pleaser. I think were we all fans of this one? Anyone didn't like this one? I think we all appreciated it, right?
Loved it, yeah.
Yeah.
But I will say, my thinking here was that Jurassic World, that franchise has consistently done well. This one, Rebirth, has also did well. I originally wanted to put Superman at my number two as well, and I just I let the logic of Jurassic World's box office sway.
I think that's the overall theme we're going to see here is that I think this year, maybe more than most, and most of us, one excluded, pretty much did really well. It's just that it's four or five, six or seven. It really came down to the placing much more this year than other. A lot of the years just came down to number 10, and we'll get to that. Was important as always, but yeah, it was pretty close.
Yeah. Jurassic World Rebirth did come in at number three. But yeah, let me first say that for Superman, Peter and Jeff put it at number two, so dead hit. BJ, Jermaine, and Devendra all put it at number three, so just one slot away from the actual slot that it was. And that brings us to number three, Jurassic World Rebirth, at $338 million. So just a little bit under. Again, Peter Serretta and Jeff Cannata, dead hit at number three. Now, BJ Colangelo, you actually put Jurassic World Rebirth at number one for the summer. How do you feel about the fact that it's number three? Like, do you feel like it's justified? Because I know on the Filmcast, at least Devendra and I thought this is one of the best Jurassic World / park movies in years.
This
is much better than the crop that we've gotten recently, which was a relief. And there was a period of time where I was like, ooh, maybe this is going to get kind of a backswing and do a little better than it did its opening weekend. And it just didn't happen. And that's fine. We're going to get a lot of hell CGI animated people now. Great. Awesome. Love that for our society.
I'm just gonna put this out there. I think the world has become
Jurassic
tired of terrible Colin Trevorrow Jurassic World movies, and when a good one arrives, they
when
are
a halfway decent one arrives.
Yeah, they're unreceptive.
I think it feels refreshing.
They're unreceptive to it. And
he
you know,
did not
to be
direct
fair,
this film.
That's what I'm saying. It's like
this is better than his.
When there's one that's not horrible. But the movie didn't do badly by any means, right? It just didn't.
For the record, Jurassic World 1 is better than this movie.
Get I agree with that.
How dare you?
Leave the show right
disagree.
Now.
Disagree. What? But anyway, Jurassic World Rebirth didn't do badly. It just didn't light the world on fire, and it came in at $338 million domestically for the summer. Okay. The Fantastic Four, First Steps, at number four. $266.4 million domestic. Peter, Jeff, BJ, Jermaine, Devendra, all dead hit this at number four.
That's poetry.
Cool kids.
Almost
cool kids hit it.
That's almost the whole podcast.
Let me count. How many people are there?
I think that covers the whole podcast.
Who are we missing?
I think there's...
Everybody carry the with 60 two. Points and above, hit back. Let's put it that way.
But, look, I think you what you guys are alluding to is the fact that one of us was a bold one. You know, one of us decided to zig where everyone else zagged. One of us decided to take some big swings where everyone was just trying to
big kicks,
to do a bunt, to
big kicks to the head,
to do sometimes, a base hit.
Somebody, sometimes a base hit is what you need to win the game, David.
Sometimes you need to take a home run swing every single slot, and that's basically what I did for the first four slots. You know, I put Casey How to Train Your Dragon at number one. That did not pay off. Many people laughed at me. Many people said that's
many
ridiculous.
People continue to laugh.
There was much laughter.
How could you possibly think How to Train Your Dragon could be number one? And they were right. Honestly, the haters were right.
We can describe Dave's list this year as doing a crane kick while riding atop a dragon.
That's right.
That's Dave's
big
list.
Big ups to the haters this year.
Big ups to the haters this year.
Big ups.
They nailed it. They nailed it. So anyway,
I agree with BJ though. This is poetry, right? BJ, this is how Fantastic Four has to be fourth, right? That's just how it's supposed to be.
Yeah.
I'm sure Marvel doesn't feel that way, but I agree. I think what's really interesting here is that like it just made number four in like the last week. You want to talk about close, it's like $4 million over Train Your Dragon. And like I was a little surprised when I look back at it. I was like, wait, it actually hit number four? Because the movie I thought was okay. Enjoyed it, forgot about it after I saw it. But it had a lot of more staying power than I expected. I expected it to really, really crash. And I kind of like in my head thought it crashed. And then I was like, oh, wait, number four of the year. Okay, cool. Maybe that's just me, but that was my kind of impression
but
of it.
That's all it takes now, Jermaine. It takes just making a decent Marvel movie to like for people to be like, oh, yes, it's decent. Yes.
Yeah, but the money does not reflect. I mean, 260, if this was 2008, that would be like it was a terrible bomb.
I do wonder, guys. I'm curious what our guests think of this. Do we think this is the first year I think ever that a DCU movie has made more money than a Marvel film coming out that year, right? Or that the top film at the box office that year is going to be the top comic book movie is going to be a DC movie. And yes, Superman is one of the most iconic characters of all time, and the circumstances of a new Superman movie coming out like this are irreplicable. But I do wonder, like, are we going to see the DC Universe perform better than Marvel for the first time in a while? We got Supergirl coming out next year, Superman Man of Tomorrow coming out in a couple years, right? Is this going to be a resurgence for the DC while Marvel is, let's just be honest, struggling a little bit in terms of getting people back to the box office, yeah.
I think no, just because Marvel's next movies are insta hits, right? It's Spider-Man, which is Sony, but it's Marvel, and then Avengers. And while I don't expect Avengers to be as good as maybe the last two, I do think DC is going to have a higher batting average, you know, at this point. And as we know, singles can win games. But it is weird to see the shift. But it that's what happens in all things is, you know, you're at the top and then you drop. And I think, though, the thing that comes to mind, Dave, is you're probably right for the last, like, 20 years. But first thing that came to mind was 2008, where Dark Knight clearly beat Iron Man. But that was not exactly the same, you know. Yeah, but
yeah, that's true. That's true. Fair point. And, yeah, I mean, since the DC, the modern DC, the post-Nolan DC universe, let's say.
Right, exactly, yeah.
I do think that Marvel's going to have a harder time. Like, they're going to do fine box office wise, but compared to how much money they're spending on their movies comparatively, that's where they're going to be screwed. Because thinking about how much just the cast alone for Doomsday costs, like, that movie needs to break serious records for them to even break even.
Yeah. Yeah. And the top movie for Marvel being the Fantastic Four First Steps, making $266 million. It's a real come down from previous years, right? A real come down from the height of Marvel. And this was supposed to be their...
It's the first steps, though, Dave. It's the first steps back.
Baby steps.
This is supposed to be, I would argue, this is supposed to be one of their flagship properties, right? And the fact that it didn't do better is a little bit concerning, right?
So, I mean, it's at least a good movie. Right? You know, like good movie plus in the top five. And I think that that is enough for a big win for Marvel right now after a couple of flops.
Yeah.
The big E, as we like to call it, that people can't stop talking about, Eternals. Those movies, all those movies.
Yeah. And they had a great summer last year, obviously, with Deadpool and Wolverine. So like,
yeah.
But yeah, the other than movies like the Eternals, which I will defend, they haven't been doing particularly well. All right. So anyway, that is some thoughts on Fantastic Four First Steps. Everyone almost on this podcast dead hit at number four. One of us may have put it at number five and got it slightly off. But, you know, close enough. Close enough.
If only there had been some clue in the title.
Indeed. All right. Let's talk about number five. It's How to Train Your Dragon.
I thought it was number one. It was number five?
Yeah,
what?
Same.
Interesting.
Same, Jermaine. Same, Jermaine.
By that much.
This it looks, movie like a bunch of us, looks like a bunch of us dead hit that, but one of us is much significantly lower. Please explain.
Yeah, so How to Train Your Dragon came in at $262.9 million at the domestic box office. That means Peter, BJ Colangelo, and Jermaine Lucier dead hit this. At number five. And Jeff and Devendra, not far off, putting this at number six for Jeff and number six for Devendra. One of us had the, again, I want to say audacity. I want to say foresight.
Courage.
Courage. Yeah. Courage is a great word.
Courage is a great is word. Perfect. Yeah, let's do that.
To put this at number one, to think that quality might be the thing that that triumphed at the box office.
That live action the, remakes.
Over these Which remade happens. Dregs
yeah.
from the Disney
If universe. Only there was someone who could champion a thing that is being remade in a shoddier way.
Mm-hmm.
Where's the hero among us to champion that?
Indeed. Indeed. Well, anyway, I put this at number one because I thought, hey, all the pent up How to Train Your Dragon, the fact that I'm going to say the live action one was actually pretty good. Putting that out there. Okay, not a movie
it was
widely
be
hated.
Good. The first one is really good. It was the exact
it's
same movie.
It's the same movie.
Yeah,
yeah. There you go. There you go. Unlike Lilo and Stitch, which is widely hated. You know, hey,
also the same movie.
Sorry for trying, guys. Okay, so okay, yeah, fuck me for trying, guys. Okay, my bad, my bad. All right,
well,
anyway.
I gotta say. I am angry at America, not for How to Train Your Dragon, but for their complete miss on Elio because that's a – I loved that movie. I thought that movie was wonderful.
I liked that a lot too, yeah. Really good.
It was a beautiful return to form for Pixar for me. I thought it had all the elements that you want. It's just kind of weird. I mean, maybe a little too weird for audiences. And I, you know, hadn't seen any trailers or anything. But I also put a lot – more faith in the Pixar brand than I should have. And everybody here knew that putting Elio at five was a bad move for me. And it turned out to be the thing that killed me. But, you know.
But everybody had that movie on the list. Mm-hmm. And all of us were wrong.
I believe it is pronounced Elio, if I'm not mistaken, right? If for those who have seen it. But so How to Train Your Dragon. Any other thoughts on How to Train Your Dragon? Like, this is a solid performance, right? This is, like, I think we all predict, like, many of us predicted it would do solid, at least. And it came in at 262. There's going to be a sequel to it, right? Like, and I think, from what I can recall reading, a lot of people did enjoy this one. So, like, you know, right down the middle, right at the halfway point of the summer movie wager. Any other thoughts on this movie doing $262 million at the box office this summer? Nope.
Where it okay. was meant to be.
Nope. Hit exactly where I thought it would.
All yep. right. Well done, BJ.
I think the sequels can grow, though. I think there's room for people to hop on.
Do we think they're going to do just the same exact thing as the animated one?
We'll see. We'll see.
Yeah.
I hope
they even want to get Kate Blanchett back. Like they want to.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Even though yeah, curious how that would work, given what we know about that character from the first one. But anyway, the other thing I just want to mention, I guess, about How to Train Your Dragon is I do feel like the movie was quite scary. And seeing some of those dragons in more live-action style form, I do wonder if that limited the movie's appeal because of how kind of intense some of those sequences were. But anyway, How to Train Your Dragon, it did well. Certainly well enough to justify a sequel. So I'm happy for that, at least. Number six, coming in at $197.4 million, Mission Impossible, The Final Reckoning. Peter Serretta and BJ Colangelo both dead hit this at number six. Jeff Cannata put this at number seven. Jermaine put this at number eight. Devinger put this at number seven. I also put this at number eight. Yeah, I'm going to say I feel like this movie underperformed. Even though Devinger and I put it even lower, or Jermaine, Devinger and I put it even lower, mm-hmm. I feel like the other Mission Impossible movies have done better than this, if I recall correctly.
It didn't help that this was a bad movie.
I thought it was bad, too.
It was a key thing working against
very
it.
Very bad.
Yeah. Sorry, Dave.
So Mission Impossible Dead Reckoning did 172, so that is worse than this technically, but also I think neither the Dead Reckonings made as much as Fallout, which is 220, right? Mm-hmm. And I do think that is a sign of the quality not being as high as Fallout. This is 197 for this one. So better than Dead Reckoning Part 1, worse than Fallout. And how much did Rogue Nation do? Rogue Nation made 195. So it's about, actually, you know, it's about the same. It's about the same as like Rogue Nation.
But for the amount that these costs, because of the yes. production during COVID and everything like that, they paid everybody. These were definitely disappointments. And yeah. I like I said, I did not like the movie. I thought they had two good sequences. The rest was incredibly repetitive and boring. And I think if it didn't even feel like they're supposed to be the final reckoning, and it didn't feel like the end of anything. It felt like the next movie. Yeah. I was like, if you had given us that real big finale feel, I thought maybe that would have got a little bit more buzz. I felt like it played it way too safe. And
excuse me.
Like, yeah. So there you go.
I'm confused. My memory is just not really that good. What did you put at number six, Dave?
I think I put Karate Thank Kid you, Jeff. Legends.
Oh, yeah.
Number
yeah.
six.
How did that work out?
Wait. They made a new Karate Kid movie? I'm a Karate Kid fan. I would know.
You should tell America.
Wow. I didn't...
Look, guys. The trailer was awesome. The teaser trailer was awesome. And Cobra Kai is a huge hit, you know? I was reading the tea leaves. I was trying something, right? I was really trying something. And
courage.
Of course, it was. This is how you know, right? That we all made our list independently because obviously, if I had consulted Jermaine Lucier
or Dan Trachtenberg,
I
did not consult Dan Trachtenberg about this.
Right? Thank God.
Dan's probably huge. That guy remakes movies all the time. I bet that he was huge on this one.
Yeah.
By the way, that movie was on my list and. While we were recording the podcast and Jermaine went on his rant on why it wasn't going to be in the top 10 at that moment, I had like defeat in my heart. I was like, can I remove this from my list? Like everything he said, like had hit me. And I was like, oh no, he's right. This is not going to connect at all.
But Peter, and notably, first of all, that didn't happen obviously, but Peter Serretta notably put Karate Kid Legends at number eight on the list.
Yeah, but Dave, there's an entire top 10 list of movies between where you put it and where it actually landed.
Hey, but at least you have made an early investment on Ben Wang, who is one of our best young talents right now. You're going to see a return on that investment.
Yeah, he was great in The Long Walk, which we're going to review next week on the podcast.
God, he's so good.
Yes. So, but yes,
he's the only good thing about that movie, unfortunately.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Well, what Jeff is also indicating is that Karate Kid Legends, which
Karate
I put
Kid, not Long Walk. I think Long Walk is really good. Sorry.
Yeah, yeah. Karate Kid Legends. Yeah, I was going to say, Jermaine, wow, harsh Long Walk review. But Karate Kid Legends made $52 million domestically. That is nowhere near the top 10.
It came in 16. And you put it at six. So like I said, a whole top 10 list.
It did not help that the movie was bad. And yes, I would agree that when Jermaine, who is a huge Karate Kid fan, on our Summer Movie Wager episode, didn't even have it anywhere close to his top 10, Yes, as Peter said, a chill went down my spine. I knew then that my list was dead. I knew then that my list is dead, and everything that came after was just a formality, you know?
And I wanted to be wrong, but I wasn't wrong, you know? I wanted it to be good. Come on. Karate Kid would be the big screen. It's been a long time, but wow. Anyway, I hated it.
That's the same feeling I had when I said Elio at five, and everybody went, ooh, and I went, oh, really? Really? Everybody?
Oh, wow. Yeah, that's right. Jeff Cannata put Elio as number five. And, you know, while we're here, right, like, let's talk about all the kind of missteps people made until this point. Because
that's mostly a talk about you, though, Dave.
Okay, fair enough. But yeah, Jeff put Elio at number five. It didn't even make the top 10. So that's a massive miscalculation. Also, Devingra put F1 the movie at number five. Not a huge mistake, because it was like
it was close.
Know, somewhat close to where it ended up being. But anyway, otherwise, other than my list in its entirety and those choices we just named, everyone has kind of gotten around the same choices in the top five, roughly in the correct places. So, but yes, number six, Mission Impossible: The Final Reckoning. By the way, like Jermaine, Peter, and BJ, did you guys like this movie? Because I was the lone enjoyer of Final Reckoning on the podcast.
No.
Sorry, can't join you on that party.
Jeez.
The whole world is against you.
If you had released the last like hour as its own movie, maybe.
Yeah. Yes.
I'm actually
the
shocked.
The stuff is amazing.
Given this negativity, awesome. I'm shocked the movie did this well, to be honest.
Yeah.
But yes, as Jermaine has indicated, the movie cost, I think the reported budget's around $300 million, right?
So maybe even more, something crazy, yeah.
It is one of the most expensive films ever made. And it's unlikely they're ever going to make that money back. That said, who cares? You know? It's a new regime. It's David Ellison is over at the Skydance and the Paramount, and he's got enough Oracle money to fund 18.
Let's see what this Nepo baby can do.
Yeah,
we say every time.
Final Reckoning. Call of Duty, The Final Reckoning in 25 years. Who knows, right?
They're Tom dropping Chris money on right wing blogs. They can spend money on they're dropping $200 million on a right wing blog. They can spend money on a Final Reckoning. Who cares? Okay, so. Mission Impossible, The Final Reckoning, $197 million. Everyone somewhat close to this one. Okay. Number seven. At $190.2 million.
Surprising.
Thunderbolts. The people who did this hit dead on, Peter Cerretta, BJ Colangelo, and me, David Chen. Oh, real quiet now, guys. Real quiet now.
A lonely star.
Hey, you got one.
You know what? I don't hear any haters.
I don't hear any haters now, guys.
Tepid response.
Much like Thunderbolts, it was a tepid response.
Which is so depressing. I loved this movie so
much.
Yeah,
it's good. I like it too.
Yeah. Yeah.
I have a pull quote on the Blu-ray release. I was very excited about it because I stand by this movie. I really loved it.
Congrats.
But the second I walked out of that theater, I was like, I love this movie. This is not making money. I was right to put it where I did.
Yeah.
Let me see. I'm looking at, okay. One of the best Marvel movies of all time.
I said it. I stand by it.
BJColangelo/film.com. That is the quote on the Blu-ray of Thunderbolts.
It sure is.
Nice.
I do think it's kind of interesting that Thunderbolts, correct me if I'm wrong, guys, but Thunderbolts, I don't think there's been a lot of negativity about the performance because critically it's been so praised, right? But as a movie that only made $190 million, this makes it one of the lesser Marvel films, right?
Yes.
I mean,
yeah.
Which is like, such a shame.
I felt like the
it made less money than Eternals worldwide, right? And Eternals
the Big
is widely
e,
thought of.
As everybody calls it.
As the everyone Big e. calls it the Big E. I call it the Big E. As right. every, you know, Eternals widely regarded as one of the biggest bombs of box office history, of Marvel box office. It made less money than Eternals. But people are not talking about it as though it's one of the biggest bombs in Marvel.
I mean, it's kind of a big budget difference there, right? Like, I think there's that. And also, nobody expected anything from Thunderbolts. We were just like, They're doing a Suicide Squad. Okay, that's cute. And they ended up being good. That's
I felt like I had the opposite. For Fantastic Four, I felt like it didn't do as well as it actually ended up doing. I felt like this did better because it had a solid opening weekend, good buzz, and then like you just kind of assume a movie's going to coast. But again, everybody said because it was the TV characters and Florence Pugh isn't a proven name or whatever, that it didn't. But I honestly, again, I was like, it only came in there. I thought it did better. I feel like even though it made less than Fantastic Four, I feel like I had a much better groundswell from the fans. And again, maybe that's just my perspective. Clearly, the box office does not agree.
I did not anticipate the marketing swerve of the name change that they did.
That might have been a mistake, right? What do you think?
Yeah, I don't know. I thought that was going to help it, but it didn't seem to.
I don't know. I don't know that that had any impact.
They did a lot of good creative marketing for this movie. Like they tried the whole like a prestige trailer. All these prestige creatives working on this. All the trailers were fun. The cutouts at the movie theaters were kind of fun. Like they were selling the hell out of this thing.
Like Wheaties box thing. Yeah.
But the first week the movie's in theaters, then they changed the title in the marketing. And then you're like, wait, what is the new Avengers? Or you spoil it for people. Like, I just think it was a little confusing. I think it was really cool if you saw the movie the opening weekend and you kept that reveal. But if you were like, oh, I'm going to go see it next week, why does it say the new Avengers on it? That, like, oh, I think you'd be more mad than curious, potentially.
Conceptually super cool that the asterisk was there the whole time.
Yeah.
And it doesn't get paid off until after the movie's been out, you know, a minute. I thought that was pretty conceptually cool, but I don't know.
Probably it was like a minute. Like, it was so fast when they did that.
Yeah. All right.
Wait, before you move on, Dave.
Yes.
I just got to point out that I deadhead all seven. All seven. That's never been done in summer movie history.
Wow. It's still never been done by any one person acting alone.
Yeah, thanks for noting that, Peter. I wonder if that's going to have implications for who actually ended up winning the wager. We'll find out momentarily. Okay, so let's talk about number eight, F1, the movie. This is where Peter Cerretta's list really starts to go into the shitter.
Here, I mean, we're starting to see why the bottom of the list is harder than the top of the list.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
I think that's true every year.
F1, the movie, $188 million domestic. This is widely regarded as a success. It's, you know, Apple's first big box office hit that they've had. The movie did very well worldwide as well. But yes, Jeff Cannata, dead hit. Number eight on the list. That's eight movies that you... five movies that you dead hit, Jeff Cannata. This is probably one of your best performances yet.
Thank you.
And then Jermaine and I were a little bit off. Devinger put it way higher on the list. BJ Colangelo didn't even have this in the top 10. BJ, how do you feel about F1 the movie? What is your reaction to F1 the movie doing so well?
Same way I feel about the movie. All right.
This is also like, I don't understand Hollywood logic because the budget on this movie was reportedly $300 million. So how are we calling it a success at 188 domestic?
Yeah. I mean,
explain that to me. Somebody.
I agree.
Is it because it's, I mean, it got a big theatrical release, clearly $188 million, but is it like a streaming thing where maybe like a lot of the people got paid more up front than the back end, which is why Happy Gilmore costs like $180 million or something. Yeah. Maybe that's why.
Yeah. So maybe there's very little back end on this one, right? That's given to
right.
people.
Everything's up front.
Also, they're probably grading on a curve because the company that financed this movie has, I think, approximately a kajillion dollars.
Yeah. There's money is meaningless to that company.
Money's so meaningless to them.
There's some coming in. Look at that.
Yeah. There's some. That's right. It's like,
but it also made like exactly as I called on the list, this is going to do so much more overseas, which is exactly what happened.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. It did do better overseas than so let's see. The Final Reckoning total box office was $598 million, and then F1 the movie total box office $619. So it's about the same.
Okay.
And maybe they cost about the same. But yeah, as Jermaine put it, like Tom Cruise has probably some first dollar gross back end deal. Maybe Brad Pitt does too. We're not sure. I don't know. Who knows? But regardless, it is a good point that sometimes movies make exactly the same amount of money and one of them is a huge hit and the other one's talked about as a box office bomb. And that's weird. And we should be skeptical of that. But F1 the movie did pretty well. Apple TV made a box office hit and the movie was relatively fun. So I was happy to watch this and see it do this well. And it's just nice to have a movie that's not based off of a superhero IP. It's obviously based off of a pre-existing IP of some kind, because did you guys get the note that they wanted you to call it F1 registered trademark, the movie, like with the little R symbol?
Oh, I sure got that email and laughed because I went, no, that will break the CMS if we do that in the headline. Not happening.
I feel like there should be a Thunderbolts asterisk on this whole thing about this movie as an original property, though, right? Because it is a franchise. It's sort of like remaking a video game, right? You can take the title, do whatever you want with it, but the thing is established. The world is established. People know what to expect. It's not wholly original.
Yeah, if you call the NFL the movie, like it could be any story, but everybody knows what the NFL is. It's exactly NFL, what this is.
Now that you mention it, it is weird to call it F1 the movie, but you know what?
Yeah.
Whatever.
Yeah.
We'll move on from it. Okay. Coming in at number 9, Final Destination Bloodlines at $138.1 million.
Good for them.
Only one person on this podcast had the foresight to place this in their top 10.
Nice.
And that's BJ Colangelo, who put it at number 8. It came in number 9. Wow, she was only one away.
Mm-hmm.
BJ Colangelo.
She was confident about it at the time, too.
What's the
I regret it immediately. She, like when you guys said the Karate Kid, when BJ got behind it, I was like, damn it, she's right, I'm dead.
Well, a couple things. First of all, this is one of the, I think the only movie at the summer box office that was directed by listeners of the Filmcast. So the fact that,
as far as we know, remember Louis Leguia.
As far as we know,
the fact that we didn't. You're right. It's true. Maybe Joseph Kaczynski does listen to the show. But we should be ashamed that we did not put this in our, even just to root for the home team. Like, we should have put it on the top 10.
Yeah, and we're shamed.
Is disgraceful. It is disgraceful and embarrassing that we did not put this in the top 10, and we feel sorry and bad about it. And it will be a stain on this podcast that we never.
Wait. That's true. Right? Wait, because people don't know this story, Jermaine. What happened when you went to interview these guys?
I talked to these guys, and we were chatting because I had known them before, as you said, Dave. They are listening to the Slash Film Class. She's longtime readers of Slash Film. And they were like, I was like, good to see you guys. They're like, yeah, well, you could have put us on your summer movie wager. And I was
I was like, wow,
you guys heard that, huh? And they're like, yes, we did.
Jermaine's like, I have no further questions.
Okay. I had the opposite experience. I'm on the right side of history. So I ended my interview talking about, they were like, you're going to win the wager. And as far as I'm concerned, I did win because I put this on the list. And so when you look at my beautiful numbers here, got a whopping 7 points there. Oh, yes. Beautiful.
Yeah. Now, I also want to, so just to be clear, it will live in infamy that we didn't put this on our list. There's going to have to be memorials. We'll have to have like a reflecting pool about why we didn't put this on our list. And that is to our eternal shame.
It's that scene from Game of Thrones where we're walking. Shame!
Yeah, that's right.
Shame!
That's right. Having said all that, the most money a Final Destination movie has ever grossed domestically prior to this point is, I think, $66 million. So less than half of what this movie grossed.
It's
so
a miracle. Cool. It's
and,
a miracle movie. Yeah.
There was pent-up demand to see people die horribly.
And I think some of us, myself, knew that horror was going to break through. And I think it broke through in different ways, obviously. And way more, you know, two films on the list are horror films, which is crazy and great. But I had that instinct. I just was completely wrong on my instinct.
I'm just glad that when the logging truck comes for us all, I will be spared.
Yes. So BJ Colangelo, take your victory lap. Like, is there anything you want to say now that you have been shown triumphant by doing such a good job putting this on your list? Like, not only did you put it on the list, you put it at the right place on the list, pretty much. Any other thoughts?
My only other thought is that this movie is amazing, and I hope that they get to make a bunch more of them, because it was such a blast. This was my favorite theatrical experience that I had this summer, because the room was just electric. Everyone had such a great time with this.
I like how you're putting little qualifiers in, BJ, so that this can be on the quote of the Final Destination Blu-ray, right? That was Thunderbolts was your favorite Marvel. This is your favorite theatrical experience of the summer.
Well, they're different experiences. Very they smart, bring different things.
Very smart. You're you know, segmenting the quotes out. I like that.
It is a tremendously fun movie.
Yeah,
best Final Destination movie. Easy.
There are things that live rent free in my head from the like. Every time I look at my ring, I think about it sliding the skin off my finger.
We love a degloving in the morning.
Yeah, everything. Every time I look at, you know, I drive by or pass by the Space Needle all the time, I always think about the opening scene of the movie.
Which is not set on the Space Needle.
Which is set on a legally distinct
Yes. Yeah.
The Space Needle.
But I will say that this movie is the funnest movie that I saw this summer, and I'm bummed that I didn't put it on the list. But like all the data did not back it making more than double what a previous installment had made. I've been fans of these guys since they were on the lot. It was a Steven Spielberg produced reality TV series like 20 years ago, and I've been friends with them ever since. And I'm bummed that I didn't put it on the top 10, but this movie is the perfect movie for them. Like the whole Rube Goldberg setup of kills. That's what they've been doing their entire career. It's all been building up to this. And I hope that they can make another one and it's bigger and better.
Yeah. I'm so happy and excited for those guys. They deserve it. They worked so hard, man. Like 15 years in Hollywood, basically, to get to this. Right. And it's so cool.
15 years. You know, and they had a big kind of streaming success with Freaks on Netflix, like that actually did very well.
And they've done Disney movies, you know, DCOMs. Yeah, right. We talked BJ.
But it is still nonetheless extraordinary for most people that aren't people on this podcast. They have basically come out of nowhere to create a movie that generated $138 million at the domestic box office. Extraordinary, extremely well deserved.
15 years for overnight success.
That's right. Know? That's right. That's right. Yeah. So we're really rooting for them and wish them the best. And my guess is they're probably listening to this. So, you know,
by the way, if you have not followed them on Instagram, go on their Instagram. Oh, they have some behind the scenes footage of how they made some of these kills and the way that they use practical effects in ways I didn't even realize when I was watching on screen. Amazing.
Yeah, Zach Lipofsky and Adam Stein are the guys who directed Final Destination Bloodlines. We wish them the best, and we're really sorry we didn't put them on our top 10.
Hey, you're welcome.
And I will say, hey, Devendra Hardo and I did have it as a dark horse. So there you go.
Yeah. Something.
There you go.
All right. Number 10, the movie that none of us saw coming, is Weapons. Not a single one of us put this as even a dark horse. And honestly, guys, I don't even know why, because Barbarian did pretty well, right? Like
the timing was bad.
It's reasonable.
Timing, the competition. And at that time, we hadn't really seen a lot from it, from what I could tell. I mean, like, because of the late summer, you know, so we didn't, I mean, I think we might've had a teaser. I'd have to go back and look at when the marketing started, but it's just hard for an August movie to break into the top 10 because of the timing.
Yeah.
And I think, I mean, it's so close. It's going to be probably by the end of this week, number 9, you know, like, even though it's so, that rules of the wager will change that. Mm-hmm. But it's awesome. It's just a word of mouth movie.
Such an
it's
great, awesome movie.
It's so original and fantastic. Zach Krieger killed it. So yeah, but yeah, came out of nowhere in terms of, I think it overperformed at the box office in a great way.
Absolutely. And $135 million domestic. Go ahead, Jeff.
The only movie on the top 10 that is not based on any pre-existing thing.
Mm.
Yeah. The only original concept in the entire top 10.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. But we all love the movie. It was an incredible film, and it's nice to see it rewarded with a nice box office take. Sadly, none of us thought it would make this much money, and so therefore, the top 10 slot goes...
One of us did select a movie that came out that week and was shamed for it. But
let's talk about the movies that barely didn't make it into the top 10, right? So number 11 for the summer box office was Freakier Friday, which made $82 million.
And counting.
And yeah, for a time, there was a question of whether this would make the 10 slot, which would have been a pretty decisive slot change. A point change for Jeff Cannata, who put
it in. It makes me win.
And I think most people probably know, but number one and number 10 have the equal 13 point. They're right. The most important slots to hit in terms of points. Yeah. So getting 0 to 13, huge swing.
Exactly.
Weapons.
Yeah. Yeah. I think literally if any of us other than me had put weapons at number 10, well, and also Devendra, then that would have swung the whole game. Like if you had put weapons at number 10,
we didn't most even of the talk about podcast, weapon. I don't even think the weapons was brought up.
Wasn't even brought up. Wasn't even brought up as it barely missed. Right.
Yeah. None of us even mentioned it. None of us even, it wasn't, I don't even think it was on any of our,
I forget when the teaser hit, but that first tease, those first teasers were good. And they
fantastic,
were
fantastic. But I said, exactly.
Yeah.
It's, but, and it crushed it. In fairness, it crushed Freakier Friday. Right.
There was a brief, beautiful moment in time where we didn't know that that was going to happen. Though, where like Weapons and Freakier Friday both came out. It's like, oh, maybe Freakier is going to do as well or better than Weapons.
And Freakier is right behind it in numerically, but it, you know, the you know, it's quite a bit of a delta between those two. But man, the fact that my number 10 is not actually number 11. Ugh.
Yeah. Ugh. Yeah.
The first Weapons trailer came out April 29th, it looks like. So we probably had just about, you know, done it at that point. I don't remember what day we recorded, but it was right around there. So we probably, you know, we may not have seen it, or we may have just seen it.
I think that's right. And some of us still to this day haven't seen it because they don't watch trailers. So
good point. Good point. But Freakier Friday is all over. Actually,
I'm going over our emails. By April 28th, we had already published the episode. So like,
yeah, there you go.
We
had recorded it. First trailer didn't come until after.
Yeah. So like, that's tough, man. We didn't even have a chance to see the trailer before.
Who are we, Jeff
Cannata?
We watch trailers.
What must that be like? What must that be like doing an entire top 10 list?
Lesson to movie studios: release these trailers early. You got to get on the Filmcast.
Yeah, yeah. That probably is the reason why it wasn't on our top 10 list. Is like
the kid didn't put it on the summer movie wager. We got to mark it earlier. We got to get before the summer movie wager.
It's all they talk about out here. It's all they talk about.
Yes, yes.
Next
episode
of the studio, we're going to be there.
Heads, heads were rolling.
Hey, I also will give them some credit for their marketing because the teasers for the movie were very effective.
Yes.
And then Warner Brothers definitely did send me a can with hair in it, which was one of the creepiest things I've ever gotten in the mail.
That can't be the first time you've received a can with hair in it, BJ.
I really hope that that was Warner Brothers.
It was. It came with a official Weapons branded can opener, which I now use. A practical gift.
Nice.
Well, I want to bring something up just because there's no other time for me to mention this. I don't know why or how it happened, but somehow it shouldn't have happened because there's no way she has had any connection to this. My daughter, who is 7,
loves Weapons,
has started running with her hands out behind her.
I wasn't just joking during the episode.
Maybe
it's Naruto.
Yeah, it's Naruto.
And the kids are doing it. The kids are doing it on the playground.
You do not do that.
Jeff, my son went to daycare for 1 week when he was 2. He was doing the Naruto run by the end of it. It's a virus.
It's Naruto running. That's what it is.
Yeah. Yeah.
It creeps me out now because I saw Weapons. Now I don't like it.
Yep.
Anyway, she's punished.
As long as it's in the daytime, it's fine. You just want to run at 2:37.
I was like, you go home and you open up daddy's cans of hair.
2:17, by the way, Jermaine.
Sorry.
The bad guys. 2 came in 12th place this summer, $74 million domestic. Jeff Cannata and me, we both had this on our dark horses list. Of course, it didn't make the top 10, but still did pretty well for an animated film. And speaking of animated films, Elio, a movie that every single one of us chose as part of our top 10 list, came in number 13, $72 million domestic. This is so sad, guys, because I don't know about you guys,
but good. It's good.
Jeff Cannata and I really loved Elio. I had a great time watching this, but it did not do that well. Any reactions to Elio being at number 13 at the box office this summer?
They announced it like 2 years before this. And you know, obviously we follow this stuff much closer, me in particular, BJ, I'm sure, as a movie news person. But Pixar movies often change a lot during production. But this, they usually don't release a trailer and then change a lot and then release another trailer and then change a lot. Where, Elio, if you go back to like the first trailer, it's a different movie, like 100%.
I recall.
And so I think people probably assumed it already was out because they first saw the trailer with God knows what movie in 2024 or 2023 even. You know, so I think it just they made a better movie, but at the expense of the marketing, in my opinion. So I think by the time it came out, people were like, I don't know, like, oh, is that's in theaters or is that like a retro screening? Like, I don't know. But that was kind of the vibe I got. And that's why I don't think it opened that well. But I think it will have a life. So, yeah.
I think the title is bad. I think the the iconography of the posters and stuff is it's hard to get a read on what's going on. There's like weird worm looking thing that's kind of off putting. There's him in kind of his strange getup, and it doesn't feel like you can wrap your head around it easily if you're not tied into all this stuff. And
it sounded like they couldn't either. It sounded like that was the deal at Pixar. Totally, I don't know what the deal is with releasing a movie trailer 2 years in advance, because I remember that earliest trailer. Then I was surprised by how different the later trailer seemed. I have not seen the movie yet, but I've read the background stuff about like what the movie was trying to be and kind of how it was stripped of certain, like, its identity, right? It was initially a queer story, right?
Yeah, I want the queer cut of this so badly, because I like this movie enough, but there are moments where I was like, this feels like this was made by committee. Like, it, you can just tell that it was focus tested to death to its detriment. I think had this been its authentic self, it would have been easier to market. It would have been something I think people would have resonated with, because even if you don't pick up on the queer coding, it at least would have felt a little bit more consistent. And then I think kids would have been less confused and would have wanted to just see this movie more.
Yeah.
And I mean, I'm not a marketer, but I feel like that translates to the marketing. Like, knowing what a movie is, what you're trying to say and convey does factor into how you sell it. And I was just really confused by a lot of the trailers and early stuff for this.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, audiences sensed, I think, that confusion as well. And that's why this movie came in at number 13 this summer, $72 million.
Better than number 16, which is where some people picked films that made the top 10. But, you know, just
Oh, thanks for clarifying. Thanks for clarifying that, Jermaine. So I do think it is worth mentioning, before we get to who the winner of this year's wager is and announce their choice for what the rest of us need to watch, I do think it is worth mentioning some movies that we chose as part of our top 10 or dark horses that didn't make the list at all. And not in the top 13 anywhere. I would say the heartbreaker for me, and I know BJ is going to back me up on this, is Ballerina from the World of John Wick, right? Like, that is a movie that was so much fun.
It's so good.
So the action scenes are so well done. And it kind of tanked. It made $58 million domestic, $137 worldwide. We're not going to see any more Ballerina stories in the future, I fear.
No.
And it's a huge bummer. It's a huge bummer because this movie is one of the, if not the best action film of the summer. And
for sure.
It's really sad that this didn't do better. BJ, any thoughts on this?
Oh yeah, it broke my heart, but it's been months and time is meaningless, but I'm pretty sure that even when I put it, I was like, this is probably not going to make money because people don't see women-led action movies. And
you absolutely said that on the podcast.
I hated being proved right. I was just really hoping, you know, it was my Furiosa spot like last year.
Yeah. BJ put this as number 9. She's the only person that put it in her top 10. Me, Jermaine, and Peter all put it in our dark horses, but this movie just did not do well, unfortunately. Megan 2.0. What a complete collapse.
Wow.
From Megan 1.0. Megan, the first movie in 2022, made $95 million domestic, massive success. Megan 2.0, $24 million.
Wow.
Woof.
The box office. That's crazy.
That's wild.
If this movie wasn't so cheap, it would be a catastrophe that it made such little amount of money.
No one cared. And I'm shocked because it felt like this had caught on in the popular culture in some way.
Yeah.
And boy, nobody cared when this.
Because it was a non-summer movie, right? Megan, the first one, came at the lull of our time.
And the marketing was kind of fun, I think, if you liked the campy stuff. But I think the first Megan people thought was a horror movie, and it was. And this, I still haven't seen Megan 2. I want to watch it. on a plane at some point in the next three
it's
years.
It's Bad Straight Camp. That's where they messed up. The first there you movie go. Was unintentional camp. The second one is Bad Straight Camp, and it doesn't translate as well.
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah.
There you go.
I think that's right, yeah. Couple of other choices that people put on their lists. We have Peter Serretta put Smurfs on his Dark Horses. Smurfs is a movie that only made $31 million.
Wow.
At the domestic box office. Not as bad as Megan, but pretty rough. Pretty rough.
It's like the entire generation of kids has never heard of it.
Peter Serretta, any reaction to Smurfs?
I knew disasters? It. I knew it wasn't going to make it in the top 10, but I was just like my shot of like, yeah. What could maybe be a weird outlier?
That is as embarrassing a pick as Karate Kid Legends, but because it's in the Dark Horses, it's going to get over. So I'm glad, Dave, that you called that out because that is a shameful pick, Peter. That is terrible.
Wow.
It's in the Dark Horses.
It's you don't exactly, want any of your there. Dark Horses to make it. I mean, the whole point is you don't want to have to resort to your Dark
but
Horses.
But you have to think that they have a chance to make money. Like, if you look at,
Hey, I'm going based off the past. I'm going based off past numbers and what animated films from the Smurfs and other like thing. I didn't think it was going to make it. That's why it wasn't on my list.
And the only other movie that I think we haven't really mentioned is Jermaine Lucier put The Naked Gun on his
yes, I did, and I'm still fine with that, even though it didn't do as well. 28 weeks later, I put in my top 10. I put his number 10, and you guys rightfully came down on me. But that was I think horror is going to pull this year, and I felt like the Danny Boy, I thought it was going to, I like the movie, is actually really good, but I think it was a little heady, where if you look at... Final Destination is just a blast. This is not, the 28 weeks is years is not a blast. And Weapons is a blast and a little heady. And this is just kind of heady. So I think I had the right instincts. I picked the wrong movie. And it cost me because number 10 is such a key slot.
Jermaine picked 28 years later as his number 10. And that movie actually had a chance at the top 10. I think it made $70 million domestic. Naked Gun, by the way, made around $52 million domestic. So, not terrible choices, Jermaine. And I actually thought, based off of the crowd reaction at my screening of Naked Gun, that might actually have a chance for the top 10. So, yeah. Anyway.
Unfortunate.
Okay. So, before we talk about who actually won and what the final point tallies were, why don't we take a minute for everyone to plug their stuff, specifically BJ Colangelo. Why don't you tell people where they can find more of your work on the internet this week?
I am on all forms of social media at BJ Colangelo. My podcast, This Ends at Prom, is everywhere you get your podcasts and on social media at This Ends at Prom, writing, editing over at Slash Film. And I have three articles in the fall issue of Fangoria magazine about Izzy Lee's House of Ashes, an exclusive look at Five Nights at Freddy's 2, and a bunch of interviews with the cast and director of The Black Phone 2.
Nice. Jermaine Lucier, tell people where they find more of your work on the internet this week.
I am on all social medias at Jermaine Lucier, one word. You can find my writing every single day at io9.com, which is part of Gizmodo. I recently did a long report from the set of Tron Ares, which was a fun set visit. We'll see how the movie is. That's me, io9.com.
And Peter Serretta.
You can find me on YouTube at Ordinary Adventures. I've been recently doing a cross-country tour of the Halloween Horror Nights event. We went to Orlando, the Mecca. We went to the new one in Las Vegas. And we also went to the one in Hollywood. So you can watch our videos on all of those.
Very cool. All right, folks. So why don't we start counting down the top six players of the Summer Movie Wager this summer. Starting with
interesting way to put it.
Starting with number six, coming in at 50 point.
Is that the last place? Six
yeah, best, I think is kind of what you're hoping, the words you're looking for.
Maybe, yeah.
Coming in at number six with 50 points, by far the lowest, but also like. Here's when I look at this list, I see a lot of bold choices. I see a lot of really.
I think we reward results.
Swimming against the current. Choices.
I would just like to point out he may have been sixth in our list, but globally, Dave came in at 1,883rd.
Out of how many people?
I think 1,884.
And look, guys, I have some regrets, but you know what I don't regret? Making bold choices. You know, making...
There was already 4,200 people that played. Over 4,200 people that registered and played. But that doesn't mean it wasn't terrible.
You know what I don't regret? Believing in the impossible. Believing in the... investing in those choices on the list that everyone thought, oh, there's no way that could make the top 10. Hey, guess what, Karate Kid Legends? I believe in you. Guess what, Karate Kid Legends? I believe in you. You know, guess what? How to Train Your Dragon? I think you're going to do really, really well, even though you didn't. Right? And do I have any regrets? Absolutely not for believing. You know, sorry for wanting to believe that we could live in a better world than we live in, guys.
It's real Mission Impossible over here.
My bad. Oh, whoops. Sorry, guys. I shouldn't have tried to believe. That's
yeah,
because
Karate Kid Legends
that.
Was so excellent as a movie.
Okay, so that's me. I'm number six.
Wait. Can I say something? I got a lot of crap because on the initial podcast, I asked ChatGPT to play this, and a lot of people got mad at me because using AI, people don't like AI. But my whole point was that AI cannot replace us. AI cannot replace the knowledge and the entertainment that comes from us.
That's and AI doesn't have Dan Trachtenberg's phone number.
Well, AI apparently doesn't like to make these bold choices because AI got beat by five out of the six of us.
Wow.
There you go. Okay.
Which one?
So most of us beat AI. Most of us our jobs are safe for now.
Uh-huh, that's good.
Uh-huh. Okay.
That's good. That's most good. Of us. Five out of six of us are better than a dumb robot.
I'm so curious which ones. You know, Peter, you don't even need to say. We'll just assume. It's okay. You don't need to say who it is. All right. Coming in at number five with 60 points.
Yeah.
Devendra Hardwar.
This one hurts because I'm looking at my list and I see exactly where I was flipping choices. I was like Superman, Jurassic World, and also How to Train Your Dragon or Mission Impossible. And I was like flipping those back and forth as I was joining the list and just landed where I landed. But I see a very different future for myself if I had gone the other way.
Indeed.
Yeah.
Coming in at number four with 66 points, Jermaine Lucier.
I was really hoping for a Top Gun Maverick this year. It didn't happen. But yeah, I feel like Devendra. I feel like just so close, but not quite.
So close.
Reigning champ. Jermaine Lucier falling out of the podium.
Dethroned. Yeah. I'm sorry I cannot give everybody another DCOM. Hopefully next year.
BJ Colangelo coming in at number three with 67 points.
She's on the podium.
I am on the podium.
Dead hitting four choices. And also one of obviously getting really high up on the podium, BJ Colangelo. Congrats on getting into the top three.
Had I chosen with logic and not my morals, my top three would have looked a lot different. I would have been probably a lot higher on the podium. But you know what? As Amy Adams said in one of the greatest comedies ever made, I got second runner up. I got second place. So I'm okay.
Coming in at number two with 72 points, Jeff Cannata. Wow, Jeff, this is
wild.
One of your best performances ever, I think. How do you feel?
I have won this before, just so you know. It's not in this decade. Not in this decade. But,
I mean, but I'm just talking about since the iPhone has come out, Jeff. So like,
wow. Since the internet existed.
Yeah,
since
that was pretty recent, though, right?
Since the internet has existed. So like. Yeah. Yeah.
Yes. I nailed the top four unassisted.
Dead hit the top four right on.
That's right. Another one dead hit. Freak Your Friday was super close. It's that Elio that really I think screwed me hard. It's the faith in Pixar that I shouldn't have had.
Yeah.
But you take that out, move everything up one. And then I would have gotten How Do You Train Your Dragon to Mission Impossible then on just like somebody else did. But, you know, wasn't wise enough to do that. This one stings. This one hurts.
Yeah.
Mostly because of the shenanigans. But, you know.
Well, I think until the weapons Freakier Friday thing, Jeff had a really good shot at winning this, running away with this whole thing.
I got to say, it was delightful seeing, like 50%, 48%. So I was in the percentage to win race.
Yes.
Because usually by like late May, I'm at like 2%.
That's right.
And it just
makes
for a much more fun summer for me. You know?
Yeah. Well, there's a couple of things that are pretty extraordinary about the number one winner this year. First of all, their list had 7 choices dead hit, which is incredible. And also,
in a row.
And also, despite that, right, 2 of their choices weren't in the top 10 at all, which is really amazing, right? So that's how good
Shocking.
The top 7 list was. It was like, literally, what they chose for number 8 and number 9 wasn't in the top 10 at all.
Don't even need 10 to win the game.
Yeah. Don't even need those points.
Top 7 list, he says, and win this game.
Coming in at number 1 with 78 points.
Dan Trachtenberg.
Peter Serretta. Congratulations, Peter. Congratulations.
Congratulations.
No more decoms. Congratulations.
I mean, credit where credit's due. I'm not even mad. I'm impressed. Like, the top 7...
That's where you and I are different, Dave.
That's really amazing. What'd you say, Jeff?
I said, that's where you and I are different.
Peter Serretta.
By the way, I looked it up, by the way, Jeff, and the year you won, you got less points than this year. So this has been the highest rank.
Hey! Well, that feels good, kind of. So,
anyways, it feels good. I did not know... I was not sure about this list, and as could be told by the top 2.
You crushed it.
You crushed it, man.
And you know what's even crazier? If you look at the global, Peter, I mean, we have some amazing places. Peter was 30th out of 4,200 people.
Whoa. Yeah.
That's wild. Crazy.
Amazing.
And that's with only 7 things or 8 things hitting points, yeah.
The number one global player.
I'm getting to it.
You're going to do that. Okay,
I'll get to it. Yep. No worries. So, but Peter Serretta, any other thoughts on making number one this year?
You guys aren't going to be happy about this.
Oh, boy. Oh no.
Oh, okay. Here we go. So
strap in, everyone.
It's going to make you wish for lemonade mouth, Devinger.
Yeah, so Peter put Karate Kid Legends at number 8 and Elio at number 9, and despite getting 0 points from those, still managed to win the summer movie wager. I mean, imagine if he chose movies that were actually on the list in those slots. It would be complete domination. So extraordinary performance. And as his prize, he gets to choose one piece of art under 3 hours long that the rest of us need to watch. We will watch it. We will discuss it at some point before the next summer movie wager. So I'm going to ask Peter what that is. But before I get to that, a couple of quick things. First of all, I want to again acknowledge Dennis, who helped to put the summermoviewager.com together.
So awesome. Thank you, Dennis.
Did a great work.
Thank you, Dennis.
Great job. And love seeing he puts together percentages as to who's going to win during the summer. It's so fun to follow along. You can follow him at Some Movie W online. But yeah, he did a great job. In addition, every year we all allow people to submit their list for inclusion on the leaderboard. You can be included on the leaderboard if you submit your list before the first movie of the Summer Movie Wager releases at the box office. This year, as Jeff indicated, over 4,000 people entered, 4,206 people entered, and the winner with 91 points was a user named Carl J73. And Carl, Dennis reached out to Carl and contacted them and asked them to say something about their victory. And Carl sent in a message that I just want to read. Carl writes in, quote, "I'm thrilled and honored to have made the first place. My name is Carl and I live in Queens in New York City. I had a feeling the top 10 would have at least one horror film. I was even tempted to put 2 in when I saw the teaser of Weapons, which was making waves the week that I submitted. Glad I at least put it as a dark horse. In the end, I went with Elio. Even if they're not what they once used to be, I couldn't imagine Pixar not making the top 10. Glad to know that even at 51 years old, I still got my finger on the pulse of movies, a lifelong passion, end quote.
So just to be clear,
he
Carl...
got to see the trailer. What the hell?
Yeah. Carl nailed 1 through 8.
Yes.
All dead on.
Dead on.
And then put Final Destination Bloodlines at 10, which was only one away.
Yeah.
And then the only slot that Carl did not get any points was Elio, putting wow. Elio at 9.
Yeah.
But yeah. Just an incredible.
And then Weapons of the Dark Horse for an extra point. That's incredible. Yep. Yeah. Incredible. Congrats, yeah. man.
Amazing. So congrats to Carl. Thanks to Dennis. But yeah, some really amazing performances. And Weapons, yeah, really, really tough to put that without the teaser trailer, really tough to put that in the top 10. Right. And he had just saw the teaser trailer when he made his list. But anyway. OK, so that's who won on this podcast. That's who won in the global leaderboard. So all that being said, Peter Serretta, as your prize, you can list a movie. You can name a movie that all of us are going to watch or work that all of us are going to watch. And apparently you've said we're not going to be happy with it.
Probably not.
Peter Serretta, as the returning champion of the Summer Movie Wager, what is the work that we are all going to watch before the conclusion of next year's Summer Movie Wager?
Listeners cannot see Peter's evil grin right now, so just conveying the context.
Yeah.
Well, in the year 1967, there was a movie that came out that changed the gangster movie. That was called Bonnie and Clyde. I did not pick mm-hmm. Bonnie and Clyde. Don't
oh,
worry, guys.
That would have been amazing. Good movie. I would have loved to
a
watch
good
that
movie.
One.
Don't yeah. worry. Don't worry. Did not pick that.
Oh, no.
But that movie was nominated for 10 Academy Award nominations and won 2. Yeah. Mine was not nominated for any. but the guy that directed Bonnie and Clyde is named Arthur Penn. And if you mm-hmm. go to his Wikipedia, it doesn't even mention, it just mentions like in the 80s, his career kind of went downhill. So in the 80s, he directed a movie called Penn & Teller Get Killed.
Yeah. Oh my God.
Yeah.
And that is the movie God. I'm picking.
I love
oh,
it.
Wow. I love it. I do love that.
I've okay. seen this before and I can't yeah. wait to rewatch it. Is there an easy way to watch this movie?
This is Peter's choice. Instead of getting us to watch 6 episodes of Fool Us, we're watching Penn & Teller Get Killed.
Yes.
1989 black comedy.
Yes.
Wow.
Is it? Do you know if it's streaming
yeah,
anywhere?
Is it even streaming? Like, how is it even accessible?
I saw it
on Prime Video. There's a rental, so it's on VOD.
Yeah, I saw it. It was on YouTube through Warner Archive or whatever that is. It's probably on other services too. But do not watch the trailer. The trailer is horrible. It has like a bunch of text, and it's not even a trailer. Just don't watch it.
So, Peter, before we wrap up today, just do you have any statements on why you want us to watch this one?
When I picked Go, I picked a movie that I absolutely loved and I wanted to share with you guys. And then we got together and everybody crapped on it.
And wait, 1999's Go?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, y'all are idiots.
It did not age that well.
I liked it.
I liked it. Yeah.
Okay. And so then I picked, what did I pick? I picked the Neil Breen movie.
Yeah, that was fun.
Yeah.
That was fun. That was a movie that I knew that we would all have fun. That was horrible. This time I picked something that I love, but I know that you guys are probably going to tear apart. So I don't care. I don't care. Give it to me. I don't care.
All right. Cool. Well, that'll be fun.
Fair.
We record that at some point in the next year. But anyway, I want to say thank you to everyone who has participated. A huge thanks to our co-hosts today on the podcast, BJ Colangelo, Peter Serretta, and Jermaine Lucier. You guys are wonderful sports, and I hope you guys have had fun this year. All right.
Always. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
That's going to bring us to the end of this episode. And you know where to find everyone. And we will see you all next year. Goodbye.